Hello, friends. Welcome to the C3 podcast. I'm your host and co-creator, Myron Isaiah Bryant. Thank you for taking the time to listen and being a part of our community. At its core, C3 exists to create a safe space for us all to be humans first, learn from each other's professional and life experiences, and choose to co-create a healthy community of betterment. I'm excited for today's conversation with our guest. And with that, let's dive into the episode. Welcome, everyone, to C3 Podcast with Myron Bryant. I'm excited today to connect with one of my longest mentors, Mike Felix. And this has been a long overdue episode and long overdue conversation for us here. He's one of the people who first educated me on business, on sales, on really just the digital age here and what we can all accomplish if we really believe in ourselves, take the initiative to learn and connect with others there. So thank you, Mike, for being here. What are your thoughts in opening up for today?
First and foremost, thank you for having me. Definitely an honor to be a part of this new growing platform. So it's an honor, man. And I'm excited to chop it up with you. I'm excited to see your growth, So just as my opening, I love talking about a few things: sales, tech, and business development. I love seeing things grow, and for anybody that's been following trends in tech, I mean, everything is about growth now. So excited to jump into some different topics that can sort of align with what can help out your audience,
Yeah. And, you mentioned everything that I'm passionate about there, right? From sales, tech, business development, growth. And, that's one of the things I think we first connected on. We met all the way back in the UCF, University of Central Florida in Orlando days. It's just the amount of growth that you were showing and continue to show there, right? Graduating from engineering perspective and then hopping into this digital sales era before it was cool at the time, right? It was just you and Gary Vee at the time, I think, that I actually followed. You, Gary Vee, and Tim Ferriss was my college career, if I'm being honest. So it was just you three guys doing this new thing, and now it's very much so different, and everyone's kind of doing it. And so much to learn from you there. In terms of just who you are as a person, we'll obviously get into just the unique experiences that you've had in your professional career and what you do there, but we try to humanize everyone that comes on to this podcast. Who is Mike Felix, the person there?
So Mike Felix, first and foremost, is a father. So I have two sons, a two-year-old and a seven-year-old. So they're the reason for the grayish color here. I am engaged. So I do have a fiance. She is not in tech, but she's in the legal field. So I get the opportunity to learn a thing or two about winning arguments with her. And outside of immediate family, I'm still here in Orlando. Been here ever since 2003. Yeah. Some other roles that I play: I am a sales engineer for a marketing automation software company, and I also have my own consulting business as well. So, and I'm also the co-founder of a nonprofit organization, which you are also a co-founder of, called Black Orlando Tech, and they're doing some amazing things still to this day here in the Central Florida area. So, again, just cool stuff aligned with tech growth and tech growth and community. So, yeah.
Yeah. No, I've been immediately impacted by just the things that you're doing in the community there. And then obviously those things will actually come up in today's stories there as well. And as you talk about some of those things from a value perspective there, right? What has been your path, right? I kind of hit on it a little bit of, hey, graduating from UCF, engineering, then kind of diving into this digital sales world. At a high level, what does that look like from you from the path perspective?
So I think ever since I got up to Orlando, I've been in search of self. And I think many of us are like trying to figure out like where we're going to be. And we're trying to predict and respond. And we're being reactive and proactive at the same time. I think I chose my career path for the wrong reasons initially. And then I changed for the wrong reasons. And then I started to grow in a direction for the wrong reason. And it was only until I started to kind of look at who I was impacting. And that's what kind of changed my perspective on what direction I should take with my work and my career and what values I align myself with. So everything that I do now, I try to be as selfless as possible. You know, I try to think like, well, who am I impacting with the work that I'm doing? And it's totally changed like what decisions I make and what projects I take on. So before it was always like, what title did I hold? And that's kind of what dictated my journey. But then now it's more so like, what am I investing into creating change for who? And that's what's aligning me with certain projects. That's what's bringing me into or putting me at certain tables that I wasn't at before. So I think just journey wise, before it was just from position to position, project to project. And now it's more, I would say it's more impact driven. So, and a lot of stuff is just coming to me now because I think I'm giving out that energy that, that I do want to impact as much as possible. So, that's how I'll address that question.
That was the best way you could answer it though. Okay. Literally the absolute best way you could answer that. Cause I mean, again, we talk about why we started this podcast is to make things human. So you can definitely answer that with titles and, you know, what you do, but the word self-actualization is, I think, something that is more human than anything. Right.
Yeah.
So you've experienced that. You can talk more about the titles you had along the way. But I think what resonates with myself and with many others is this process of I'm doing this to get to know myself better. Right. And my titles reflect that, you know, in a positive way.
Right. And it, I mean, just how you feel when you are doing work matters, you know? So,
yeah.
So I'm just noticing the conversations I'm having and the type of problems I'm solving. Like it's very different than, I mean, just this morning, I got on a Zoom call with a new creator. Like he's just getting into web development and doing marketing and stuff like that. And I'm seeing myself in him like from 10 years ago. And the way that he's processing certain things, I'm like, wow, okay. So I had to describe to him from business, you're a creator, but let's talk about the economics of you creating. And it was amazing to see like how he was perceiving it. But I also found amazing too is when I started to give him advice, I started to hear the voices of some of my old mentors telling me that 10 years ago and reflecting on some of the decisions I made. And I'm like, he's not going to listen to me. He's not going to listen to me unless I build a relationship with him and I start to, and I put on my calendar, I'm checking in with him next Friday to make sure that he actually processed what we, because that's one thing that I don't think I really got. And so, right after I'm talking to him and I'm like, he's not going to listen to me. But I know, again, just being in sales, I know I got to follow up with them. I got to sell them, you know, so.
It's important that you still said it right, even if to your point of getting to the point where you're hearing your mentors, right? One, it's important that you have it and you have it in your toolkit because it's going to come back up. And you, that might guy or girl may be on a podcast 10 years from now and be like, I remember Mike said it. But I didn't listen, but then he followed up and I did. And then how cool is that, right? In exactly what we started off with, this journey of self-actualization that we're all on, that you see yourself now becoming a mentor and reflecting what your mentors once said to you. That is as amazing a position as it can be.
right. So, and I even told him, I said, you're going to be in this position. You'll be in this position very soon when you're speaking with someone that's coming behind you. Cause he did ask me, he was like, this is some really, really good stuff. I know I'm not paying you yet. And I said, let's not talk yet. First of all, you know, this is me genuinely investing in you. But two, I'm expecting you to do this for someone else. So we're all going to be, you know, picking someone up, you know, as we start to grow as well. So, and he understood that. So,
this is It's a surreal moment because all my best mentors in life have always said exactly what you just said. It hasn't been just payment. It's been, I'm doing this because someone did it for me, and your job is to someday do it for someone. Everyone that I generally has been impacted by has said that exact same thing to me.
Yeah.
And in terms of what you kind of start to center on for your own values, right? You know, you've had a diverse career. You've been on the process of self-actualization. You're able to give back to others that, you know, identify or look like you from 10 years back. You know, what are some of the keys or values picked up along the way that you center yourself on in life and in business?
That's a good question. That's a good question. I'm going to say one important value, and this aligns with just overall self-actualization and reflecting, is honesty, both yep. outward and inward. I think when I was younger, I don't think I really embraced that value as much as I should have. I sort of kind of fit into whatever mold I thought would get the approval of those who were a little bit of ahead of me. So, you know, there's certain things that, you know, when you're in certain environments, you just don't say, because you're trying to just, you know, you're trying to be what everyone wants you to be, you know. But when I say that there's two sides to it, though, from an honesty standpoint, that also takes another value, which is like you genuinely putting in the work, or you putting in a certain amount of energy to ensure that what you're doing actually is impactful. So if you are being honest, it should be in the mutual benefit of everybody else that's also involved, you know. So your honesty shouldn't just come from just one perspective. It should come from the fact that everybody really is working together, right? So value-wise, being honest and really doing what you can to ensure that you're actually valuable, you know, and that value comes in knowing where you're going. You know, it's easy to do the right thing the wrong way. You could do the wrong thing the right way, but it's important for you to make sure that you're doing the right thing the right way. So, and sometimes that doesn't, sometimes you really, again, you have to put in the work to figure that out, you know? So honesty, integrity, just, I don't like calling it hard work, but I like to say it's just, just smart work, you know, like impactful work. So that you can, again, be valuable from a personal standpoint, professional standpoint, and just overall, you know, everybody around you understands what you bring to the table, and you know what the hell is even on it, you know? So, that's how I would address that question.
I love it. I identify that honesty in the clarity aspect, right? Of, hey, how clear can I get on myself? That's honesty, that's self-actualization, right? How clear can I get about the people I'm in relationships with personally or business, right? And what we're trying to accomplish, co-create connection, all those different things together. It's interesting that we say honesty, right? Because again, going back to one of the books you first, you know, shared with me was Daniel Pink's The Sales Human. The perception of sales is the opposite of honesty. And that's come up on different episodes here, right? Of, you know, it's, hey, all salespeople do is manipulate people to buy something they don't want to do that's not going to help them. And not only is that not true, right? But a great salesperson, a good salesperson is never going to do that. You have to be incredibly honest, incredibly trustworthy, and spend your time solving those problems that people want to solve there. But right. I'm curious of how that honesty value, that integrity value shows up for you on a day-to-day basis as you're doing sales, as you're actually coaching some of your clients as well.
So you're right. You're right in that most people's perception on sales is that, whoever is doing the selling is not being very honest. And in order for you to be more honest, I think it's important to make sure you solve the typical problems that would typically drive people to be dishonest. So whenever, like before someone enters into like, let's say a sales conversation, I see sales as an exchange. It's an exchange. So my role here is to really understand what you value both on the side that you're currently on and on the other side of a solution, right? So if you are in a better place on the other side of a solution, then it's my role to paint that picture for you so that the cost of the solution you're excited about. You're excited about that investment. It's not a cost for you. It's an investment. Now, there are cases where you have a salesperson who has a limited number of opportunities to show people or paint that picture for a prospect. So they sometimes fall into a selfish mode. They need to, their intention is to solve their problem, which is they need to get paid or they need their commission. They need to hit their quota. They're going to be doing a QBR and they better not look bad in their QBR. So like there's things going through their head as this big deal is in front of them. So when it comes to how I address, those type of situations so that I could lean in on honesty, I like to focus on that element that would typically make someone dishonest. If I could identify where in a pipeline there may be a bottleneck, that would help me be able to know that, hey, you know what, if this prospect that I'm speaking to, if I'm not the right solution for them, I'm able and I can afford to be 100% honest with them. And I have the desire to be 100% honest with them because I know that there are other opportunities on the table that my solution is a best fit for them. You know, so I've actually had a lot of prospects for my own business. I'm like, hey, I'll be honest. I really don't think that I'm a good fit. But I think this individual or this software would be a better fit. And they send me a bunch of referrals. So it's cool because like I being honest uncovers a ton of other opportunities, but at the same time, the reason why I don't feel the pressure of honesty that most salespeople may feel is because I'm trying to make sure that there's no bottlenecks to make this opportunity seem like I'm limited by them, you know. So if anybody is listening that isn't sales, you know, it's key to start to pay attention to what might cause you to think, well, man, I won't have much to drink tomorrow. So I need to drink as much as I can today. Well, no, you can. It's okay. Just throw that bottle out. Figure out how to gather more resources so that you can be as honest as possible with your prospects and those who you want to impact.
Yeah, I think that's so important, right? It's if you think this is. I remember one of my other mentors when I first got into sales was saying, there's no such thing as a must-win deal, right? And you may have those times where you're like, oh, I got to win this, or, you know, my manager knows about this, or whatever it may be, it's commissioned, whatever it may be that's incentivizing you selfishly, right? That can go away, right? Are you solving the problem that customer wants to solve there? Right. How do you kind of get honest about that for yourself? Or then do you ever even get honest about that to the customer, right? Hey, you know, this may be a potential bottleneck that we have here, right? And I'm just going to be honest. If you ever feel uncomfortable in the sales cycle, or if you feel like I'm leaning you the wrong way, you know, let's have that conversation and you ask those hard questions. How do you really begin to portray and project that honesty within a sales cycle?
I mean, I think it's a dance. It's definitely a dance. Yeah. It depends on a lot. Some of it depends on how they're engaging with me. You know, so if I notice that there's a pain point that has been identified, then I can at least ensure that I'm speaking to that not just that pain point, but also what problems that solution may bring, right? So I'm able to be, you know, as clear as possible in that respect.
So you've had a very diverse, you know, path, right? From engineering and entrepreneurship, sales, coaching, leadership and community building. And going back to Daniel Pink's The Sale is Human, that you don't always have to have a sales title or any type of title, right? To be able to pick up these tools and values that make you to be successful. So you mentioned things such as honesty and the self-actualization process. The best Mike you can be, the best Myra and I can be, bleeds through into every area of our life there. So what are maybe some of the unconventional things that you've learned in your path that provide value to just your sales, just your coaching that you have on a day-to-day basis?
So from an unconventional standpoint, well, this may be conventional, I don't know, but I've realized that the way, and this is a quote too, like the way you do anything is the way you do everything. And I noticed that, like just in my journey and my experiences, I'm noticing that like there are these little habits, these little things that I may do in one area of my life. And I'm noticing parallels in others. Mm-hmm. And it could start from the littlest things. It could start from just leaving, like when I get home, I take my socks off and I leave it there. And then I'm seeing, okay, I'm noticing that I do the same thing with my files on my desktop. And okay, I'm noticing that I'm doing the same thing with my notes within my CRM. Okay, I'm noticing. And so when it comes to unconventional things, I'm focusing a lot more on little things that I know can accumulate, and yeah. I'm sort of magnifying it as much as possible so that I could avoid it across the board, because somehow little habits bleed into other areas of your life and your career. So that's one thing. Another, I would say, unconventional thing that I do is I like to, and this is something that I've sort of picked up over the years. Like if I'm in an organization or if I'm speaking to a client, or if, I like to understand the economics of everything. Mm-hmm. I like to understand the economics of my own time. I like to understand the economics of someone else's time. I like to know, like, hey, like I'm having a discussion with a doctor here, and like let's say I'm talking to a doctor for an hour. In my head, I'm like, this doctor just gave me $200, and. It's weird. It's a weird, unconventional way of looking at things. But the reason why I like doing it is because I like to ensure that when people understand trade-offs and exchanges,
yep.
Their time is one of those things. I think we tend to overlook our own time. So because within my business, I'm speaking with startup founders and I'm talking with like aspiring entrepreneurs, new early stage entrepreneurs, like I'll hear certain things like, yeah, I've been working on this for 3 months. And then I'll ask questions like, well, how much would it have been if you just bought it? And they're like, oh man, too much, expensive. And I'm like, well, tell me what's expensive. Oh, that would have cost me $10,000. And I'm like, what? But your time was worth 40. So like it's a little unconventional thing that I do that I think helps me with creating these perspectives or these angles that help me with communicating certain economic trade-offs, especially in sales, you know. So I hope I hit the target with that one, because those are really some unconventional things that I do. It's weird.
it's so important, right? And it's not talked about enough, excuse me there. One, you talked about just the value that everything in life is connected, right? That you can't show up here one way and show up there one way and expect them not to come to a head and rub at some point. It's going to happen. And that's just so important. I know last year I did sales coaching as well. And that was one of the first things my mentor through that program mentioned is, hey, you show up as Myron, period. Like not as Myron at work, not as Myron outside of work. And then even as you talked about the value of time, that's the second biggest thing we start to learn. It's like, hey, how can we make sure that we're mindful of our time, mindful of the time of everyone around us? And we begin to quantify that, right? The exact same example you gave me, right? As like, hey, do you want to cut your grass and spend right. 4 or 5 hours on a Saturday and struggle yourself and be mad? Or do you just pay someone to do it in like 30 minutes? And it's like, it's going to be more, right? On money right. side. But if you start to, you know, equate for the money of your time, it's easily less, easily. So it's so important.
Yeah. And that's what helps with identifying whether or not there's an opportunity cost.
Yeah.
To thinking one way versus another, you know, like, so yeah, again, like it's a weird, unconventional way of thinking, but I'm noticing that it is, it's, well, you know what? And that's the reason why I started this off by saying, I don't know how unconventional it is, because I'm noticing like what I consider to be unconventional is nothing more than maturing in my entrepreneurial acumen, you know? So, and 5 years ago, unconventional. Now, also that's how entrepreneurs think or should think, you know? So that's how salespeople should think. Leaders should think, you know? So it's non-conventional, but I think it's more just maturing and growing as a professional. So
I couldn't agree more. I think one, sales, entrepreneurs, people really should think about that, because what that does on a human aspect is shows you value people's time, right? If nothing else, it shows I am cognizant that you're giving me this time that is so limited. We can put a number on it based off of how much our day job is, but frankly, everyone's time is invaluable, and I'm just being cognizant of that. And then I think the next layer of that is, again, self-actualization, as you mentioned there, right? Of like, it's interesting to see that this is something that people that we respect and our mentors are starting to talk about more and more there. As we talk about the mentorship aspect, we talked a little bit about Black Orlando Tech and just how active you are in the Orlando community and community building and building that community and making sure you're doing that in a very intentional manner. What are some of the tools or lessons you've learned while building community? Because I think you do it just about as good as anyone else I've met here.
Tools in community building. So I just got a message. I just got a message to be on a panel on the latter half of March. I forgot the exact date, but the panel is all about building equitable relationships. Yeah. And I think from a community building standpoint, I think it's necessary to build relationships, but at the same time also build platforms. So so community building I think has a number of elements to it. I forgot the name of the book, but I know there are three elements to form community. There's the eaters, the feeders, and the leaders. And like everything creates a platform. And when you think about a platform, like not only can, if you're on the platform, you could see more, but at the same time, more can see you. So I like to look at what roles are required to create the platform and who it's serving. And I think that that really helps with the whole, you know, building community thing. You know, I chose like Black businesses to lean into, and I started to look at, well, what are they asking for? How many am I engaging with? Who do they admire? Who are they looking up to? What do they look up to? And I started to, you know, where are their disconnects? And once you start to piece some of that stuff together, you know what events to throw, you know who to have as speakers, you know what type of content to put out there, you know what, you know, you know what type of model you should create to draw and to impact that audience. And you got to measure that, because once you start getting people to, you know, sign checks and say, hey, oh, we want to help your community, you got to know who to say no to. You got to know who to say like yes with a little asterisk, you know, like, so community building is all about, I think, connecting all of those puzzle pieces and just making sure that the picture it's painting, people are smiling in it.
Yeah. And one thing that you said that stood out is how much you listen when building community, right? Hey, what if I'm building this community, what are people struggling with? What are their needs? If there's a disconnect, how do I create that bridge, right? And again, this is just a human sales thing. In sales, it's called discovery. In just our day-to-day life, that's just frankly listening to someone to figure out what they're going through, what they're struggling with, and how you can be of service or help to them. Right. And that's something that a lot of people struggle with, right? Whether it be through sales or life, right? People keep saying, hey, you know, one of the biggest things that new salespeople struggle with is discovery. In layman's terms and day-to-day terms, that's, hey, people struggle with active listening. So they're not separate. It's the exact same thing.
Right.
How do you really think about that, right? When you're really trying to tune in to what someone's saying, listen intently, make sure that you're hearing not just what they're saying, but what they're conveying.
Right.
What are some of the tools you use for some of those moments?
Yes, it's a good question. I, instead, outside of tools, I think it is, I think it's making sure that you're creating an environment for you to be free to listen. I know in sales, and this happens across sales organizations, salespeople are getting, there's pressure, you know, there's pressure. Yeah. There's, hey, you know, you have this commit for the quarter. Hey, you're a little behind. And then like when you're entering into certain conversations, like you're hearing them, but what's being processed, what's happening behind your ears and eyes is this deal is 150,000 and this puts me in a good place. Right.
Yep.
And if you're able to get rid of that, then you can actively project your energy towards a real solution that would help someone. But again, that's you being honest and clear and transparent with your environment, your leaders around you, really understanding the business as well. Because if you don't understand the business, then you're just going to be, you're going to be just kind of following scripts, and it won't be active listening. I saw a tweet the other day, and it said, if you want to be a good salesperson, learn the script. If you want to be a masterful salesperson, understand why the script works. And that takes into perspective, like, what should be communicated both ways in order to ensure that this is a mutually favorable conversation happening. But if you can get rid of that pressure, sometimes that can free you to have a good, effective conversation and actively listening to them, even if it takes a couple meetings, you know, a couple opportunities so that they feel heard. So,
yeah, I'd say there's many ways to say what we're trying to do here on the podcast. I think that's a beautiful way to say exactly that, is that it's getting away from these tactics and these technical terms and just making it more human, and what's behind the script is one way to say what we're trying to do. And I appreciate that. And even more so, I'd love if Daniel or somebody, maybe Mike, you write the book on the psychology of sales. It's not to sell to your customer, but what happens on those calls when you, what you just said, right? Hey, you just said you're 150K behind your commit. What happens after that for salespeople, and what's the positive response to that versus, oh my God, I got to go get this. Because everyone has been there. That's the psychology we really need help with. There's 1,000 manipulation books. That's why we have the myths we have. But how do you control what happens here when you hear that? Book we need.
but that's why over time, like, you can tell, a lot of times you can tell when you're speaking with a more seasoned salesperson. They'll get onto a call and they'll disarm you. Like, hey, we're having this discussion. I'll be honest, I don't even know if we're going to be a good fit, but this conversation is for us to explore whether or not, you know, it's going to be beneficial to work together. And then they'll lean into, like, hey, I'm excited about A, B, and C. You know, what excites you? And they'll start to ask some questions versus a less experienced salesperson. You're like, yeah, so why did you fill out that demo request form? It's like, what? Because they want to get right into, like, where are we at? You know? So yeah, you could definitely tell. But again, the more seasoned person is less concerned about, you know, those pressures.
Yeah.
But I think age also gets in there too, because there's the more responsible you are with, like, I believe that everything has a lagging, like, there's lagging indicators to everything. So your bank account is a lagging indicator to your relationship with money. Your relationships is a lagging indicator to how you communicate and respond to friendships and, you know, love and stuff like this. Your credit score is a lagging indicator to your ability to be trusted with other people's money. So, like, there's always these lagging indicators. And I think that, like, newer salespeople again, like they're feeling that pressure because they're just starting a family. They, you know, they may not have been handed down a house from their parent. Like they're just starting life. Yeah. So there's all this stuff that has to be invested in. So they're like, I got to get this right, you know? Yeah. And so it leads them to take sales roles out of context versus it being you helping people. It's like, I got to sell. And that's, you know, I think good salespeople understand it's not about selling. So,
it's all about helping. It's all about problem solving. And that's as human as you can make anyone's job, because everyone's job is solving some problem or helping someone. Right.
You're right.
You've mentioned, I think in like a question or two ago, listening, and that's the question I've been asking a couple of our guests here as well, is it's such a skill. It's such a important thing that we all do and get better at. But in today's just life, right? There's so many things competing for our attention and priorities and time, right? How often do we feel listened to anymore? Just on a human level, right? Just taking sales aside of that. Like, when was the last time Mike actually genuinely felt listened to, and what created that space for you to feel that?
That's a good question. It's a really good question. It's so good that I was in therapy and I didn't feel listened to. We're in premarital counseling. And when was the last time I felt listened to? Man, I'm gonna have to get back to you on that one, because outside of me trying to get all deep in, I listen to myself. I cannot think of. I mean, of course, there are some people that you know you can engage with, and you know that they're listening, because there's nothing for them to lose or to gain. But I'm thinking about someone who has something to lose or gain that has listened to me, and I'm outside of my partner, of course. But there's something to lose or gain there, right? So I don't know, man. I don't know. And again, that's very telling of like our society today and just overall relationships and the challenges of, you know, maturing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't answer that question, man.
It's an important question that came naturally on some of these episodes, and I've been reflecting on it myself. And again, I've been going to therapy for 6 or 7 years now, and the joke I made with a guest, it was not recorded at the time, but everything we're trying to model our professional kind of life off of is things we've learned from our therapist. Like the degree of listening that a therapist can have and hopefully does have if they're a good therapist is probably the best you'll get.
Yeah.
Right. They're not, you know, plus or minus one way, or they're just generally there to hear what you got to say and try to figure out a solution with you. And there's not too many places like that, especially online and the priorities and culture we have here and all the follows and likes. It's something I've been asking. I hope that people start to ask and provide solutions to as well. We can all provide the solution for one another ultimately, right?
Yeah. And just with therapists, I mean, outside of just, and I don't think that it, I don't believe, or I don't think that it all comes from formal training. I think a lot of it comes from this state that they have to put themselves into that requires them to disconnect from this very subjectivity. Is it subject? Yes.
Yeah.
This connection with, because I could just imagine how much weight would be on a therapist that would care to, like, if you're an empath and you're a therapist and you're like, oh my gosh, what are you going through? And that's all day, you'll burn out. But I think some of these therapists, I think they can, because they see it so much, it's like a police officer seeing bodies, you know, like after a while you see a body and you're just like, who's going to come clean this up? You know, like, it's not like, oh my God,
sensitized.
Like they're sort of desensitized. And I don't want to say a therapist is desensitized, but I think that they're able to kind of sit back and have a less biased vantage point, because they can disconnect, you know, just through all of the, just all the practice, you know? So, and I think just overall with life, I think it's important to practice being still as much as possible, you know, like I live in a downtown area. And so like, I actually, there's never a moment where I'm not hearing something. Like I'm always hearing a fire truck, a police car. I'm hearing tires screeching. I'm hearing people laughing. I'm hearing people, but like, I'm always hearing something. So my mind is always, you know, so sometimes like I have to move myself into an environment, both physically, emotionally, mentally, where I'm able to be still. So that does involve my phone being on D&D the majority of the time. That does involve, you know, my Slack not having notifications active. It does involve me being able to have control over my mind, so that if I am somewhere, I'm there. You know, like yep. if I'm having a discussion, like it is, there's nothing more aggravating. I'm sorry. Let me not even use the word aggravating. There's nothing more. There's nothing that would make you feel more unheard than to be engaging with someone and you notice that they're checking their phone, or they're checking the time, or like something grabs, even if it's for a half a second, you know, they're not with you, you know? Yep. So, I have to put myself in an environment so that I can be present, you know? So
it's so important, right? You're making the intentional decision, mindful decision, if you may say that, to put yourself in an environment to be present. And same with me, like I've had to D&D my phone. There's some times where I've literally, if you check my cameras in my house, I do have cameras in my house. I go to one of the many reasons I go to a therapist, Heidi. I will literally throw my watch off someday. It's like, dude, if this thing buzzes one more time.
I don't have any notifications on. Yeah. I don't. Cause again, like if I do, my anxiety will also start to, you know, cause all day, like someone needs something. And you mentioned Tim Ferriss earlier today, like when you read some of his stuff, like you'll notice, like he even mentions in some of his books, he's like, hey, like you could be treating everything as priority, but if you were to just leave that email there, by the time you probably get to it, the problem's solved by someone else that you delegated or that you even had responsible for solving those problems. So, and I'm noticing that's true. So it's true.
And I'll make this connection. We talked a little bit about the selfishness of newer salespeople, of any salesperson who can kind of reach that state, right? Because they feel like they have to close the deal. One of the best things I heard from a salesperson who was a vet when I first got into the career path was that qualification was his biggest tool to really be successful. And you just said, hey, if I leave this email there, if I leave this problem there, it'll solve itself. That's the answer. Even in life and in sales, like if you're responding to things that will just work out, right? If you're looking at a deal as like, hey, I have to close this, but if you're really honest with yourself, they'll probably be all right with it. Are you allowing yourself to spend time on the things that really need your priority versus are you actually spending time on the things that just, it'll work out. Whether I put my hands on a responder or not, it'll work out.
Yeah.
And that's maturity.
That's maturity. And it's also you going from being busy to productive. There will be a point where you're like, you know what? I can sit here and just look busy, or I have this really important meeting that is happening in the next hour, and I'm not in the mental state to be able to, I'm not in the state I need to be. So you know what? Instead of looking busy for the next hour, I'm going to go for a walk. And that may be the most productive walk you ever have, because the outcome of that meeting may be more important than your response to these emails that could be responded to next Thursday. Yeah, well, not next Thursday, but you know what I mean? Like later.
Yeah.
You know, it's So this is all right. So this is also a personal thing. This is a personal thing. Me and my fiance, we bicker a lot about this, right? So one role that I had as an intern when I was in school, I was working in production engineering. And I remember having to write these manufacturing process plans for these electro-optical assemblies. And like everything had to be in an order. Everything had to be sequential. Like there was a cost to everything, right? So when I look at doing certain tasks or when I see certain things that have to be done, the way that my mind works, like I know, well, you know what? I'm not gonna start the meat yet because the meat's gonna take 3 minutes. I'm gonna start boiling the water, and I'm creating a timeline to these little projects in my head. My fiance doesn't always think like that. Like if meat has to be cooked and stuff got to be boiled, like she's meat's on the stove. Oh, we're gonna make eggs, and I'm just like, the eggs are going to be done too fast. Like I'm thinking like that. And the reason I bring that up is because like when you do start to focus more on the outcomes of things and you work backwards, sometimes that can help with knowing what to even focus on now or over a period of time, you know? So it's not that, and she's an attorney. So like everything is not like, how a manufacturing process is, or so everything is just pick up the phone and call this person, address this now, you know. I couldn't be an attorney or a realtor. I couldn't do it. Like I watched my friends, hey, deals coming in, hello, oh, I'm anxious, like I'm like there's no way I would fail in that type of sales role. Everything with me has to be scheduled. Where we added a pipeline, like I can't. So people are just different.
I can't do super reactivity either, right? And to your point, my mind works similarly where I'm typically like, hey, I got to do this, do this. And like some people are amazing multitaskers, but Myron has to focus on one thing and one thing only. So the better place I can do that in, the better I'll do in life. Again, maybe ending where we started off, right, with that self-actualization is one of the things that I appreciated when I first met Mike back at UCF was you didn't graduate and have this feeling that you had, what's the word? You would have arrived, right? A lot of people get their degree, especially in engineering of all degrees, that, yo, I got it. I'm done. I'm just going to get this job. I'm going to sit here. I'm like, I ain't got to do nothing else. I got it. Right. I saw you get that degree, which is one of the hardest degrees you can ever get. And you just like continue to invest in yourself, continue to invest in other people, continue to learn. Where does that come from and why was that important for you?
I mean, I think a lot of it came from who I surrounded myself with. Yeah. I surrounded myself with community. Surrounded myself within organizations and, you know, people, other peers who I considered family. I got to school on accident. I don't know if I ever told you my story, but, what? I this might date myself, but I grew up down in South Florida and, my brother and my parents, like they got me a computer and like, didn't have any plan with regards to like how I would even use it. And I ended up like breaking it and started to enjoy fixing it. So I love computers. I love the music. I love to burn CDs and I love to, so I was the guy. I was that guy that was burning a ton of mixtapes back in the day. I had the LimeWire and I also I loved cars. So I used to fix, and install car audio systems for people around the neighborhood. So people used to bring their cars and I love cars. I say all of that to say this. I didn't have a plan like for college at the time. My neighbor, mind you, I'm short. So for anybody listening, like watching, like my bald head is the only thing that makes me look tall. I'm short, right? My neighbor, he's 6'8". He was 6'8 at the time. So he hit me up and he was like, hey, can you take me to this college fair? Cause I want to play ball. So I was like, oh, all right, cool. Yeah, I'll take you. Cause I'm the one that had the car. So I took him and this was down in Miami-Dade Community College. We're walking around, and this guy comes up to me, and he goes, "Hey, are you here for the fair?" And I was like, "I mean, yeah, I brought my friend." And he was like, "Oh, well, what do you like to do?" And I was like, "Well, cars and computers and music." And he was like, "Have you ever considered engineering?" At the time, I've never met an engineer. I didn't know what an engineer was. It was so bad. I told the guy, "I'm not interested in driving trains." I thought engineers drove trains. So he laughed and he said, "Come here now." Older black dude. And yeah. He had me fill out this application. Long story short, a couple months later, I got a letter to participate in a program at UCF. And my mom said, "Hey, are you interested?" And I was like, "Whatever." That's what brought me to UCF. When I got to UCF, I got embraced by organizations like NSBE, and that's what kept me in. And I was like, "Well, if this can impact me like this, what role do I need to play to help impact someone else?" So my own self-development came from just like seeing how one little seed can turn into, you know, a certain level of success. And I don't say I'm a big success, but I at least made it somewhere. And I like to impact others because I see what others have done for me. So all of that to say that like my journey was kind of weird, but I appreciate getting there. And a lot of that, just who I surrounded myself with, continued to lead me in a route of just ongoing self-development, wanting to be better, wanting to impact more. So if I'm going to give more, I gotta be more, you know? So
as long as we've known each other, I've never heard that story, but it's an amazing story. I'm happy that you shared it. Cause it's so powerful, right? It's what we started with, right? Of not just self-actualization, but you now being maybe that guy on that campus was like, "You could be engineer, you could be something else. You can do digital sales." Right. And then we'll skip the C3 conversations, those questions this episode, because a question I've been wanting to ask, and I think this is the perfect time to ask, is how important is community, right? Because I've observed more and more that we think our lives go out a certain way because of decisions we make, and 100% we have accountability on a lot of things in life. But being in the right place, being surrounded by the right people automatically opens up options to you that you either do even know about, i.e. being on that campus and having someone introduce you to engineer, or gives you just this layer of, for lack of a better word, a wave, right? That pushes you towards something that you don't even know yet.
Yeah.
And I think about that a lot of how do you create community that can be a positive impact for people, even if they don't even know what's out there for them yet.
So I'm going to go back for a second. Right. So
yeah,
when you think of self-actualization and just the term, a lot of people may not be aware that it's within this hierarchy called Maslow's pyramid of needs. Yeah. And it's at the top. And there's other elements of that pyramid, which is like belonging, safety, security, self-esteem. And, you know, the reason why all of that's important is because you get a lot of that from community. Yep. So self-actualization is at the top. And then you have these other tiers: esteem, belonging, love, safety, security, and then physiological needs. And when you have a community around you, you get that support so that you are able to be comfortable in your self-actualization. So I think community is extremely important. That's the reason why when you have communities, that's the reason why you have like groups, like peer groups, when you get together. It's the reason why you have events. It's the reason why you have awards. That's the reason why you have support teams and groups. That's the reason why. So you have organization, you have community, so that you could hit those different elements of that hierarchy, so that when you're at the top of your hierarchy, like you're able to say like, I feel supported, I feel good, I have my community. So you can be in your, you can actualize, because otherwise you got to worry about the whole thing. You got to worry about your own esteem. You got to worry about your own safety. And how much more do you have to actualize if you're worrying about every element of your pyramid? I can speak on community for a long time. It's very important. It's very important, especially if you're looking to, come into this world, and, you know, we're all going to eventually exit this world, but, we will get to the point where we're saying, hey, am I leaving this place better? And a lot of times your community is going to validate, that you're on the right track. You're doing the right thing. So
there's no better way to end it with that. The last questions I always ask or say is one, thank you, Mike, for coming on, sharing your journey, your experience, your wisdom, your path. I've been able to benefit from it for over a decade now, and happy we're able to share it with many others.
Oh, man, thank you, man.
Because you've shared so much, what can we give to give back to you, right? You know, what can we do as an ask from Mike?
I don't need anything. I love to share my story. And actually, you know what? There is something that all of the listeners can give me. It's in really, like we spoke about active listening earlier today, and there were some references to books. There were some references to certain concepts and certain things, life-wise, professional, personal. It's important not to just listen and just sit. It's important to listen, respond, and engage. So any platform that this is broadcasted through, it's important to ask questions, ask for support, find a mentor, hold yourself accountable, work backwards on things, find the space that gives you the breath to think and be present. Start to look at whether or not there's little micro habits or habits that's bleeding into certain areas of your life. Like there's like certain things that we discussed on this, like reflect so that, you know, I can't tell you how many people I've spoke to within the past couple of weeks. And I asked them, what was your New Year's resolution again? Just to be funny. And they're like, oh man, I don't know. Like, and the reason why is because we're so like all over the place. If I could ask anything from everybody listening, it's to really take like the information that's coming out of this platform seriously and to, you know, put it into practice. So, cause you're investing a lot of energy, Myron, to put all this together. So thank you. So this is just amazing, man. So that's my ask for people to take a lot of these gems seriously.
Thank you, Mike. I couldn't put it any better. It's don't just listen, reflect, practice, and reflect again, and keep practicing and keep the loop going, and it kind of just goes from there. Yes, thank you, yes, Mike. Yes. I appreciate you more than I can say on this podcast. Thank you for those for listening. That'll be it for this episode. Wait, friend, before you move on, take the time to gift yourself the Sea of Clarity or Community. With so many pulls for our time and attention today, one of the best gifts we can gift ourselves is a moment to simply breathe and be present. To gently process our experiences, emotions, and thoughts with grace and non-judgment. To do this, take the next 2 remaining minutes of today's episode to practice simply paying attention to yourself. Or maybe gift yourself and or others community by connecting with us online. You can thank today's guest, share your experience and lessons, or connect with others as well. To do this, go to the website c3.community or our C3 Community LinkedIn page, or of course, our YouTube channel. As always, friend, thank you for listening in and for choosing to be a part of our community. We hope you take a few precious moments for yourself. See you soon.